Hey there, folks. You are listening to Inside the Desert Oasis Room, episode number 42. This episode is sponsored by Tanduay Rum. Established in the Philippines in 1854, Tanduay is the world's largest rum producer and winner of over 170 international medals in the past four decades, including Brand of the Year in London's World Branding Awards Rum category from 2015 to 2017 and Rum Brand Champion of the World by TheSpiritsBusiness.com in 2015. As sponsor of the Inside the Desert Oasis Room podcast and the toast to Master Ninja Ray Buen at the legendary Tiki Tea in Los Angeles, California, Tanduay Rum is the perfect companion to celebrate all things tiki. For more information, check out their webpage at TanduayUS.com or follow them on Facebook or Instagram at TanduayUSA. This podcast is also sponsored in part by the Royal Hawaiian. Founded in Laguna Beach, California in 1947, the Royal Hawaiian is South Orange County's premier tropical drink and dining destination. Come try their signature cocktail, the Lapu Lapu, a delicious combination of tropical fruit juices with a generous float of dark spirits, or other island-inspired favorites like ahi tuna poke or the dynamite crab-crusted mahi mahi. Enjoy their delicious brunch or drop in for happy hour from 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. daily for drink specials and more. To make a reservation, visit RoyalHawaiianLB.com. Today we chat with Charles Phoenix. Charles Phoenix is a retro pop culture humorist, mid-century historian, and entertainer. If you've ever attended one of his comedic historic tours or vintage slide presentations, then you know what he's all about. We talk about what he does, how he got started, his new book, his new clothing line, and much, much more. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as we did bringing it to you, and if you did, help keep us on the air by making a small donation. Go to polynesianpop.podomatic.com and click on the donate button. For the price of a cup of coffee, you can help keep new episodes coming to you every week. I know that sounds kind of cheesy, but I heard that in an infomercial once, so I figured I'd give that one a try. So, okay, you want Charles Phoenix? I know. Well, here he is. I stopped at the garment district.
What are you looking for?
A dinner jacket.
A dinner jacket.
So I actually found something that I like that has a vintage look to it.
Because you didn't get it?
I bought it.
Where is it?
It's in the car. So
put it on hold.
Yeah, I know. I have to go get it.
I'm dying to see it.
So it's vintage looking, although it's brand new.
Yeah.
And I had it tailored while I was there.
You did?
And it was done in 30 minutes.
Tailored while you wait?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but it's Monday, so it's not busy.
What'd they get for the tailoring?
$15 is what I paid.
So reasonable.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So gosh, so you went shopping in the garment district and you got a dinner jacket. Are you going to a dinner?
Well, this is actually for the room party that I'll be hosting at Tiki Oasis.
Oh, really? So does it have a tiki feel?
Oh, it's got a mid-century feel. It's got the black tuxedo lapel that doesn't have the, you know, the pointy edges or anything.
It's a shawl collar.
Straight down.
It's called a shawl collar.
Okay, so got one of those, and it's got kind of like it's a navy blue color. I didn't want to get a red one because I didn't want to look like a waiter at Musso and Frank's.
Uh-huh.
And I got a nice satin bow tie to go with it. So,
did you get a proper pant?
Yes.
And a proper shirt?
Yes.
And a proper tie?
Yes, yes.
And you're going to be proper.
I think I'm ready to go.
Ready
to go.
Proper.
It's not a Charles Phoenix suit. Not one of those cool zany suits that you wear. But I think it'll be nice.
Well, it's fun to buy new clothes. I love buying new clothes. I really do. I mean, I like it less now. But you know, my place where I go shopping is my favorite place to go shopping, seriously, for clothes. Is one place and one place only.
Okay.
Retro Row in Long Beach.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No. Have you been there?
Yes.
It's
the
best.
But I've never gone there for clothes.
Oh, well, what else is there? I mean, they have all kinds of
furniture
stuff.
Furniture and accessories. And
they have all that.
Yeah.
And they even have, like, the roller skating place where they make roller skates. Like,
oh, really?
In every color you want.
I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, there's a roller skating place there as well. But they have the best vintage clothing stores on the planet for the price. A Retro Row, Long Beach. That's where you go. That's the place. And that's where I love to go shopping. I buy reproduction stuff And which is, they have some amazing stuff, like at Sneaky Tiki, I think it's called. You know that store, Sneaky Tiki?
Yes.
Yeah. They've got amazing reproduction, gorgeous stuff. I'm actually working on my own clothing line right now.
Oh, you're kidding me. Yeah. I didn't know that.
A menswear line called Sir Charles of Phoenix.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, what a great name.
Yeah, it's part of the company that does, it's through the company that does pinup girl clothing, which they, a lot of the girls and women and ladies and others wear their beautiful dresses like a Tiki Oasis and Dapper Day and Viva Las Vegas and all that. They're vintage style. So my line, Sir Charles of Phoenix, will be vintage style menswear.
Oh, how nice. That's pretty cool. There's nobody doing that right now, right?
Well, there are. There are other people do it. I used to be a fashion designer, so I know what I'm doing.
Oh, well, there you go.
Uh-huh.
That actually leads me to one of the questions that I have for you.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm a tiki person.
Yeah.
And so I think that our audiences, that there's a little bit of crossover there.
A lot of crossover. Crossover to what, though?
Well, just with the kind of the same interests that we both like to talk about.
Yeah.
But for those that don't really know what you do, which I can't imagine that there's anybody out there who doesn't know what you do.
There is.
Tell our listeners exactly what it is, because I know that there's a lot of things that you are known for, which are your tours and your historic tours, your books. And, of course, your slide presentations. Really fun slideshows.
Yeah. Basically, I am a pop culture humorist.
Okay.
A retro pop culture humorist. I am really, really interested in mid-century style and design of all kinds. And I've studied it my whole entire life. And I got started in show business because I started collecting other people's old slides from estate sales. That started in the 90s. And then by the late 90s, I started doing these retro slideshows that I still do.
Right.
And kind of sort of after a few years of doing all retro vintage slideshows, I mean, with all vintage images of other people's old Kodachrome slides, I began including myself in the stories. Like I saw this vintage place or this vintage thing and this vintage slide, and then I decided to go and try to find it now. And this is what happened when I got there. So it's kind of a then and now kind of a thing. And
so that follows... all started just from finding slides, collecting slides.
Yeah, yeah, that's my show business career. And so I've been doing slideshows now for 19 and a half years.
Okay.
So I've done that. I've done a few books. The most popular one, the one that actually grew legs, was called Southern California in the 50s. And a lot of people bought it. I sold it for like 15 years at all my slideshows and stuff. So people have that book. I have a brand new book coming out now called Addicted to Americana, which is basically me celebrating classic and kitschy American life and style. It's a combination of vintage Kodachrome slides that I've been collecting and me at vintage places discovering things, you know, now that are in the slides then and stuff like that. So it's kind of a crazy, colorful kaleidoscope, a mad mashup of retro pop culture. It's all kinds of the themes that we love. Mostly... It kind of mostly is, but not really, more kind of outer space age style stuff. But okay. There's also everything else. There's food. There's all kinds of transportation. And there's a whole section called theme park land.
Were you not a vintage person before you started collecting the slides?
Oh, no, I was. I was born vintage.
Okay.
I mean, what made me vintage was two things. Number one, I grew up in Ontario, California. Oh, Ontario.
Ontario is not far from where I live.
I know.
Yeah.
I know where you live.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I grew up in Ontario. My dad was a used car dealer. So he would drive a used car home every night, and I would race out to see what kind of car it was. I knew every car by the time that I was, you know, 4 years old. I knew every car, basically.
Wow.
I could tell you what kind it was and what year it was. At least those kind of late 50s, early 60s cars, because that's what they were. And so I became completely obsessed with cars as a young child, and I'm still completely, I mean, I kind of hide it a little bit, I guess, but I'm completely obsessed with classic cars. That's my number one thing.
Okay.
But then I started watching I Love Lucy, which is all 1950s retro, and I just really fell for the style of, you know, them, you know, yes. Their world. And, you know, I thought Lucy looked amazing in her Lucy dresses, and I always admired Ricky Ricardo's suits and stuff. And so I've always wanted to be everything retro. I grew up going to Disneyland, so I have a theme park sensibility. So I'm really accustomed to, and my brain functions well in the realm of going from one, you know, style to another, like, you know, to go from Adventureland to Tomorrowland, no problem. I mean, basically, you know, a lot of us decorate our homes that way. We have like a, you know, a Frontierland den with a, or a tiki bar with a Frontierland den and a Space Age kitchen and a, you know, Main Street USA walk up the front lawn.
Yeah, yeah. So you were in Ontario. I grew up in Diamond Bar.
Well, I knew
not far from Ontario.
I know Diamond Bar. My cousins live there in Del Sol Lane.
Del Sol Lane is near where I live.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Diamond Bar didn't have all the mid-century stuff that all the rest of the Inland Empire had.
Well, now, wait a minute. Diamond Bar was quite mid-century. It was late mid-century because their house, my cousin's house in Diamond Bar, was built in about 1970. So it's kind of on the...
It was more ranchy because it was the Diamond Bar Village. That's where the name of the city came from.
Right.
And it had... I remember as a child, we moved there in the early 70s, and the big thing about Diamond Bar was they had this marketing campaign that they called themselves Country Living.
Yeah.
My parents had a license plate frame that said Diamond Bar, Country Living.
Well, I'm thinking of my cousin's home specifically was kind of on the mod side, much more than ranch, even though it was kind of ranchy colors, because it had like you walked in the front door and the ceiling was diagonal. The fireplace was really high.
That whole neighborhood's like that.
Yeah, and then the kitchen had that, like, House of the Future lighting in it, which the whole ceiling was light panels.
Yes.
So that is mid-century.
Yes.
And they had mod furniture. And I can remember, like, the first time we went over there, and they had their entire living room done in all, like, peacock blue, like, super mod furniture. On the way home, I'm like, Mom, why don't we have mod furniture?
Yeah.
And she turned around at me at the back seat of the car and said, because I like early American.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, right then. Okay. So as soon as I moved out to Hollywood, when I was 19 years old from Ontario, California, I did my house in a beautiful blend of Western ranch and Chinese modern.
She must have thought that that was unusual.
She thought it was a nightmare. Everyone did, but I loved it and I didn't care. But, you know, it's funny because all this like vintage furniture and stuff now that's so unaffordable, you can't even afford it. I remember when all this mid-century stuff, couches were like $15.
Oh, yeah.
Because I started thrift shopping in Pomona in 1977.
Okay.
Pomona and Ontario, I mean everywhere, but Pomona and Ontario had tons, especially Pomona, had tons of thrift stores.
Yes.
And
it still has a lot.
It does. Yeah. It does. But
and
the,
if you go down Holt and you go into Ontario, there's a whole bunch of thrift stores.
I know.
And they're great.
Are they?
They're not picked over like some of the other places that we know about.
Okay.
You know, that a lot of people know about. But in the Inland Empires, they're still kind of, you know, you can still find stuff.
I believe you. I mean, I gave up thrift shopping quite a while back ago because I have too much stuff.
Okay.
And my life became more focused on not what I could find, but more what I could create.
Uh-huh.
You know, so my life shifted. My life's, the time I wanted to spend, my spare time that I wanted to spend and what I kind of wanted to do with my time shifted from acquisition to creation.
Yes.
So that was, I mean, all the while though, I was collecting stuff and observing stuff, and I still observe, of course. I was learning, you know, I mean, to me, thrift shops are schools of style, museums of merchandise, and, the perfect place to study the underbelly of our mass consumerism culture, which I'm very interested in the mass consumerism culture. I mean, I'm obsessed. I mean, that's a huge,
those are great observations.
They are.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Now, what I'm curious about is growing up in the Inland Empire. Because I had family in Upland and in Fontana before it's the Fontana of today, where it was really dirt roads, or I should say two-lane roads just surrounded by dirt.
You know, I'm so mad at everybody who's always like, people say mean things about Fontana and stuff. I never will. First of all, I just love to say the name, Fontana.
Fontana.
It's like Pomona. Yeah. I mean, it's a lovely word to say Fontana. Yeah, I mean, I know all those areas really well. I know Southern California super well. I drive around in my car all the time. I just drive endlessly, aimlessly, all the time, looking for stuff.
Do you remember the Inland Empire the same way that you see it in your slides?
The Inland Empire.
Or I guess in general, even the San Gabriel Valley, Los Angeles. Do you see things in your slides that just kind of, oh yeah, that's not how I remembered it, but well, this slide shows that's exactly how it is.
I mean, I can remember, you know, I mean, I was born in December of 1962. So I remember, you know, I was a very observant person as a child and maybe mm-hmm. as an adult. I remember what everything used to look like, and everything is completely different now. I mean, you can see through the layers of time, and that's what I've really trained my eye to do, is look through the layers of time. But the world...
I love that you say that, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when you said that at one of your slide presentations, I thought, that's genius, because sometimes you see something and it's just old, but then if you look through the layers of time, then you learn to appreciate, well, wait a second, this is actually pretty cool.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a really nice way to be able to see the world and to see through kind of the evolution of things, is to be able to look through the layers of time. So everywhere I'm going all the time, I'm always looking through the layers of time, every neighborhood, every building, you know, what was it, what it used to be, whatever. But, you know, it's a very different world we live in now than we lived in 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 60 years ago. Everything changes so quickly. I mean, so slow, yet so quickly. At the same time, evolution is around us everywhere, every minute, all the time. And so I've watched the world evolve. I mean, I'm old enough to kind of have seen a major shift. And it's interesting to watch and see the way things evolve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very interesting. I mean, sometimes it's not for the better, but, you know, it is what it is.
Is that what inspired you to write your books?
What inspired me to write my books? What inspired me to write my books, really, more than anything, was just, you know... You know, I need something to do. So, well, how about I write a book? I mean, I don't watch television. People get mad at me. Like, what do you mean you don't watch television?
I don't watch a lot of TV either.
I threw my television out the window in 1984.
Okay.
Or maybe it was 83.
Was really unorthodox back then. Today, it's not uncommon for people to not watch TV.
I know there's a lot of great stuff on TV, like Game of Thrones people talk about. I don't know anything about it. I'm not into episodic anything. You know, I'd rather make, you know, my own TV show than watch a TV show. I don't have that attention span, really. I'm trying to learn stuff, not be entertained. I'd rather learn than be entertained. I'm not that interested in being entertained.
Okay.
I mean, learning to me is entertainment, and studying... you know, mid-century culture of all kinds, and looking through the layers of time now and finding special things in special places, time warps and treasures. That's my entertainment.
Do you find it ironic that you're saying that as an entertainer? Because I do.
Well, I never thought of that. But, you know, I mean, the time that I'm when I do my shows and stuff, I'm up there an hour or 2 hours or whatever. I mean, it's not that much time. But I don't even know what that means. I don't know. You stumped me.
When you look through those slides,
yeah,
what are some of the interesting things that you found? That have you found anything that you couldn't use?
Well, in the realm of collecting amateur photography, I mean, after a quick while, you start to realize that everybody took the same kind of pictures, basically. It's almost as though they read the book that said, take pictures on these occasions, take pictures at these places. So you got all that. But what you're really looking for are the places and the situations and the sights and scenes that didn't usually get documented.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like shopping malls and drive-in movie theaters and coffee shops and restaurants and theme parks even weren't that heavily photographed. But I'm looking for the unusual pictures more than the usual pictures. Or if I find something unusual in a usual picture, you know, you're looking for, just like in slides and in life in general and studying history and trying to unlock stories, you're looking for greatness.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
What's some of the unusual things that you've found?
I mean, there have been so many. I mean, you'll have to wait and see in my brand new book, because okay. A lot of them are in there.
Okay.
I mean, some of my all-time favorite finds are in my new book, Addicted to Americana. That's what it's called.
Okay.
Addicted to Americana. So a lot of my favorites are in there. My favorites I show in the slideshows. I mean, I have a lot of different slideshows that I do. No two shows are ever alike. And, you know, depending on where I'm going or what the whatever is or what they've requested or what I feel I want to do is what I do of all the different theme slideshows I have. So, and they're all, as I said, they're never the same twice.
So when you say your favorites, are these your favorite photographs or are they favorite places that maybe you enjoyed when you
I mean it's a photograph more than anything. So I mean you're just looking for, you know, photographic greatness. I mean obviously some subjects are more interesting yeah. than others, but you know you're looking for a great version of whatever you're really, you know, what's unusual. I mean great photography is accidental.
Yeah.
I mean, in amateur photography, it's accidental.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm happy if there's one great shot in an entire collection of slides.
Well, you know, I have a theory about why there isn't a lot of it in the older slides and older photographs.
A lot of what?
Just like, you know, if you're looking at something unusual or documenting, like, you know, other than the standard shots that you say that, you know, there's, we should take pictures of, you know, this place on these occasions. Things just weren't documented because you had a roll of film that maybe in the early days had 12 shots in it.
Right.
So you didn't use it taking a picture of the restaurant. You used it to take a picture of grandma.
Right, right, right.
Or, you know, someone's birthday or something like that.
Exactly.
So sometimes when you go and look at these old slides or these old photos, you really got to dig for that shot that somebody took the time to take a picture of the room or a picture of the building, because it was always a backdrop. And you know, today we appreciate these things that we no longer have, but back then it was just another place that I don't think people recognized that down the road they would be nostalgic about or that we would miss.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've built so much and we've torn so much down. I mean, so much greatness never got documented at all.
Yeah.
I mean, places, so many places.
You ever think about that? Does that kill you?
Well, yeah, because I notice, like, you know, like, for example, there's a slide that I've shown often in my slideshows because it's basically one of my all-time favorites. If not, it's a Lure Quality Meat Rocket. It was a giant rocket ship in the 50s on the back of a flatbed truck. And it's what the Wienermobile was to Oscar Mayer. This was to Lure Meat Company. And it says on the side, Lure Quality Meats. They were a meatpacking house in downtown Los Angeles. So I've searched and searched and searched for other photos of this Lure meat rocket. And there's a couple that exist. And that's it. I mean, there may be others. As a matter of fact, today, my publisher of my new book, Addicted to Americana, emailed me to say, you know, my best girlfriend's grandfather, you know, was the vice president of that company, and they probably have some vintage photos. So it's like, you know, that's pretty cool.
That's gotta be exciting to hear.
Of course. You take leads wherever you can get it. She also said, my other best friend's father owned a big fabric printing company downtown. They specialized in the 50s and 60s in Hawaiian prints.
Oh, wow.
She said they may have some old Hawaiian bolts of Hawaiian print fabric.
You're kidding.
Do you want it? I said, do I want it? Are you kidding? It's gold.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's like somebody offering you a bar of gold. Yeah,
I know.
Of course.
So anyway, it's funny. Like, you know, some people just don't understand. You know, I mean, they're thinking of other things. They're, you know, it's like everybody doesn't realize how great certain things are.
And the people here, in all fairness, that are going to be getting you these bars of gold.
Yeah.
It was just a job for them 40 years
ago. Right, right. Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to take their work home. You know?
Yeah.
And of course, most people just, they don't view work the same way they view their, you know, their other outside interests.
I know.
This episode is sponsored in part by Steadfast Pomade. Steadfast Pomade is a strong-holding, medium-bodied, water-based styling product for men and women, which leaves your hair looking slick, neat, and shiny with a clean, fresh scent. Its unique formula allows you to easily restyle your hair throughout the day and washes out with ease. Steadfast Pomade is American-made and veteran-owned. Available in original and anchor hold, get yours today at steadfastpomade.com. Tame the waves and keep it steadfast. This episode is also sponsored by Tiki Diablo, artist, carver, builder, and mug maker, with an extensive client list including Mission Tiki Drive-In, Tonga Hut Palm Springs, Tiki Co., Hennessy's Tavern, Walt Disney Imagineering, Lowe's, and Home Depot, plus art installations at Latitude 29 and Undertow. For custom art, tikis, mugs, or build-outs, find him on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Tiki Diablo, or on his website coming soon, tikidiablo.com.
You know, it's funny the way that I met you.
Oh, yeah, we have to talk about that.
You know, you're always going to be a special friend to me, even though we're not really, we don't talk that much or whatever.
We don't hang out much, we don't talk much, but we do have a connection.
We do have a very special connection, and it means a lot. That was a magical moment.
It's a funny story.
Do you want me to tell the story?
You tell your side, and
okay.
I'll tell my side.
I'm going to tell my side of the story. So I was at Amber and Bobby's house. In, I think she's Crafty Fox on
Amber
Instagram.
Fox.
Amber Fox. Okay. I was at Amber Fox's and Bobby's house in Anaheim one night at a party, and the whole house was full of people, and they were dancing and singing and drinking, and they were in the backyard and the living room and the kitchen, and everyone's having a good old time, including me. And I, you know, like as you do at a party, you kind of just disappear for a second. You have to go to the bathroom. So I went in the bathroom. It was a very quick trip to the bathroom. It wasn't like the library. So, and then I come out of the bathroom and everybody in the living room is gone.
The whole house is empty.
The whole house is empty. I went into the kitchen. Nobody was there. I went out to the backyard. Nobody was there. I thought, am I in the Twilight Zone? Are they playing a trick on me? What's going on? I've never gone to a party where you just like don't even announce yourself going to the bathroom for a second. And then you exit the bathroom and nobody's there.
Right.
So I'm like, I'm looking around. I walk into the backyard. I walk back in the living room. I walk in the backyard. I didn't know what happened. I walk back in the living room. Ding dong.
Right.
And I open the door and you're standing at the door.
Right.
I'm like, what is going on here?
Well, you said to me when you answered the door, hey, where did everybody go?
That's what I said.
And I looked in the house and I said, are you the only one here? And you said, yes, where did everybody go? And I said, well, I think that they're probably across the street because I parked around the corner. And as I was walking to the house, there was a group of people that I saw go from the house across the street. And so I said, why don't we walk across the street and let's just see if that's where everybody is. And sure enough, the party had shifted to the house across the street.
But very quickly.
Very quickly. And everybody was now at the house across the street, and they were eating and dancing and playing music and all that kind of stuff.
And a great time was had by all.
Yeah, that was fun.
You, otherwise, I wouldn't have even known to have gone across the street. I didn't know there was a party across the street.
Yeah.
And Anaheim is an amazing city. I love Anaheim. There's so many beautiful old homes there. In fact, the homes that we were in that night.
Those two homes were both historic homes. They had plaques on them with the build date, the original owner's names, and the history of each property.
Yeah.
Which I don't even recall off the top of my head, to be honest with you.
Well, what the names of the properties were?
Yeah.
Well, that would be a lot to ask for you or I to remember that. I don't remember.
Well,
either,
you know, but some of the preservationists would scold me for not knowing.
No, they wouldn't.
Yeah,
no, they wouldn't. You're excused. Trust me. So, anyway, what were we talking about? The meeting of the party? Yeah. So, anyway,
so
what
that
are
was
your
fun. That was a fun night.
That was.
Yeah.
So we're forever bonded as a result of that.
Yeah.
So that's
Which
why when you emailed and said, can we do this?
Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding? It's you, dude.
Well, I have that, and I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Charles. I have a bunch of stuff that just a bunch of the fun things that you do that I want to know more about.
Okay, ask.
So I want to know about your test kitchen.
Oh, the test kitchen. So yeah, so basically the test kitchen started as a result of me. How did it start? I better get my story straight. What was the first thing I made? Oh, it was the Astroweenie Christmas tree.
The Christmas tree, yeah.
That was the first thing. The Astroweenie Christmas tree. And it was basically based on something that I'd seen in a slide, a Christmas, and you know, someone's on their coffee table. It's a styrofoam cone covered with tinfoil and then multicolored toothpicks on it, all over it, each one studded with a different little savory bite. of whatever, you know, appetizer stuff. And I made it and I put it online and people went nuts. They still talk about it. And they still, that was like 8 years ago, 9 years ago. Then I made the chirpumple.
I get chirpumple every year.
The chirpumple is awesome. The chirpumple is something I completely made up out of my own head, which is a pie stuffed cake, a three layer pie stuffed cake. Chirpumple, cherry, pumpkin, and apple. Those are the three pies. Each one is baked into a different flavor of cake. Cherry and white, pumpkin and yellow, and apple and spice cake with a cream cheese frosting. Chirpumple, cherry, pumpkin, and apple.
Now, how did you think of that one?
Well, I'll tell you, the real reason I thought of that is because it basically my aunt, who lives in Riverside, we were having Thanksgiving there as usual. And after Thanksgiving dinner, everyone eats the dessert or whatever. But, you know, everyone's full or whatever. So they said, I only want a sliver of this. I only want a sliver of that. And so traditionally in our family, we've always had a cherry pie, an apple pie, a pumpkin pie. And my mother always made my grandmother's hand-me-down recipe, always also this cake, this family cake, which happens, it's, I won't go into the details, but I'll just tell you, it has one layer of spice cake and one layer of yellow cake. So anyway, it's really good. Everyone loves it. Everyone eats it. So I thought, I said, after we had all eaten dessert, everyone got a sliver. Each person used a different paper plate from every sliver for 3 hours or whatever. And then at the end of the night, like the paper plates were like an art installation stacked right up higher in the trash can
with
in the kitchen.
With different colors on each plate.
Higher than me, taller than me. So I, before everyone left that night, I said, okay, family meeting, everybody. Next year, we have to be a green family. We cannot waste so many paper plates. And in order for us not to waste the paper plates, we're all going to get one paper plate for dessert. And I'm going to make, put all of the desserts in one slice.
So that it is the reason why the chirpumple exists, is to yes save paper plates.
To save paper plates, to be green, to not waste wow so much. That's why the chirpumple exists.
Because that's mad scientist kind of stuff right there.
Well, I'm just saying.
Because, you know, you see something like that and you think, who thought of this? Man, my first thought when I saw that is the turducken.
Yeah, right. That's the normal one, yeah.
Right, well, yeah. If you consider that normal, that's right. Funny that you say that.
That's a normal comparison, normal comparison, yeah.
What's the secret to keeping a chirpumple from sinking in the middle when I make it?
Well, there's, you know, the problem with making a chirpumple is that there's several challenges. One is, before you even start, you have to realize the whole time that you're making the chirpumple to the time that it's done and finished and eaten, it's going to rule your life. It has superpowers. Right. And like, it causes all kinds of emotions, like right from like fear and sorrow and extreme happiness. Like the chirpumple is a powerful thing.
It also fosters love and guilt and jealousy and all of
so
those
much
different emotions.
So
yeah
much. And yeah, so it's tough. But the way to make a chirpumple is really simple. First of all, I just use like Sara Lee frozen pies. That's the best right there. And then you bake them and let them sit overnight on top of the stove and let them kind of congeal.
Okay.
And then you basically mix up your batters, your three different batters. And I went to the specialty store now and got slightly bigger cake pans. So they're not like the edge of the 9-inch pies aren't right on the edge of the 9-inch cake pans that you get at the supermarket, which I used for a long time. That'll work too, but basically, you put some batter in and you detin the pie, trying not to break it at all, and you push it down in there and pour more batter on top. But if you have a bigger pan, like a 10-inch cake pan, it makes it a lot easier because then it's a little stronger.
Right.
But, you know, and then bake the hell out of it. I mean, you got to bake it good so it's really done. And the pie inside never knows it's been baked twice. It just doesn't know. That pie is so highly processed
that
you could bake it 20 times and it wouldn't know, as long as you don't burn it. So then you de-pan, de-cake tin your now pies baked into the layers of cake and freeze them overnight.
Freeze them
overnight so they're good and hard. The next morning you bring them out and you stack and frost them with cream cheese frosting frozen. And then you can like put it in the refrigerator until probably about like 5 hours before you're about to serve it or so, the day of Thanksgiving or whenever. And then bring it out and let it just kind of slowly cool. I mean, warm on like the kitchen counter or whatever.
So I have a couple thoughts about the chirpumple.
But
when you go to Claim Jumper, they serve an 8-layer cake. Have you ever thought about taking a chirpumple and stacking that on top of another chirpumple?
Well, you know I think about that.
Done it already?
I have only done another
Someone's
layer.
Never thought about
I've done another layer. I did a chocolate with a pecan pie in it, and that was heaven. I mean, it's great. The problem is pies are heavy.
Yeah,
and they start to, you know, collapse it.
And that's what I mean when they sink in the middle.
They sink in the middle. I mean, it's not, you've got sink in the middle situation. There's not only just sink in the middle situation, there's hemorrhaging out the side. There's the whole thing sliding over. But the thing is like, this is not your grandmother's cake, all prim and proper, like the old days.
Yeah.
This is a 19, we're in the 2000s now, whoops. This is like a 2000 something cake where it if it performs for you by doing a little hemorrhage or a little landslide or a little split or a little fail, a little collapse, or whatever, that's fantastic because it makes for conversation. The kids like it, the adults like it, the dog, everyone loves it. So don't worry if your chirpumple isn't perfect. It's not about perfection.
Right, well, it'll still taste the same.
Yeah, it's still great.
And you know, if you've ever been to Cold Stone, Creamery, they take ice cream and then they smash up a Kit Kat bar or a Snickers bar.
You go there a lot?
No, I don't.
Why?
I don't even get there once a year. I do have a sweet tooth and I do love ice cream.
But
it's just, it's so rich and...
powerful.
Yeah. But the thought I have when I have that, right, is I'm already eating poorly by having ice cream. But then now I've also stuffed it with a Kit Kat bar.
Right.
And then whipped cream on top.
I'm a little bit of a purist.
And chocolate sprinkles.
All I want is just plain ice cream, really, at the end of the day.
So you don't go there.
I had a funny experience, though. In Florida, I went to this place. My friend was driving me around Florida, all the old-timey classic places that I'd love to visit everywhere I go, look through the layers of time. And she said, we're going to go to this place. It's been there since 1959. It's called the Shake Pit.
Okay.
She said they have a million different flavors of shakes and they have everything. I'm like, great, let's go. So we get there and I'm trying to be all prim and proper, poised and dignified. And so I order like one scoop of ice cream, but she's like, no. I'm having a banana split. So I'm like, okay, great. I'll have a few bites. Okay, great. So here comes the banana split. And she's like, unlike me, she's like a super slow eater. I mean, I inhale my food like there's a fire going on.
Especially if it's ice cream.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, I was done with my ice cream like 20 minutes and she's, you know, barely like made a dent in it. And I'm like looking at it. I have a couple bites and everything, but it's starting to melt a little bit. And so I'm like, you know... Then we got distracted by looking at all the stuff on the wall. And we were turning around. We were looking at all these old-timey things all over the wall, which was so great and everything. And we turned around, and the banana split was gone. And we were sitting at the counter at this place. Banana split was gone, and instead there was like a tall glass with like a milkshake in it that was like kind of a warm light chocolate color. and she's go, what's this? This isn't what I, this isn't, where's right, my banana split? Right. And the lady's like, it was melting. I blended it for you. And you know, there's nothing better than a blended banana split.
It'll taste the same because it melts before you finish the whole thing.
It was even better than the actual banana split.
Now it's just it's a chocolate banana shake.
It is strawberry.
And with strawberry,
right?
That's a great combination.
It was.
And so, getting back to the ice cream, the ice cream is, if you look at the Cold Stone where they're adding candy to the ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, now you're having ice cream at a candy bar.
Yeah.
There's a place next door to the Cold Stone, in the same shopping center, that stuffs donuts with ice cream instead of like a jelly donut.
Yeah.
They cut it in half and then they stuff it with ice cream. Then they put toppings and all that on it. That's how I view the chirpumple when I put ice cream on a chirpumple. It's just like all of these different things that are bad individually and making a big pile of it in a bowl and just...
It's good.
And indulging. Yeah, it's really good.
I like the idea of putting ice cream on chirpumple. That's good.
Yeah, because, you know, hot apple pie with ice cream is great.
Heaven.
Cake with ice cream is
great. I love cake with ice cream. Cake with ice cream is my favorite. I love to mix cake and ice cream together into a mush.
Yes.
No dessert is better to me than that.
Isn't it?
So ice cream cake mush. That's my favorite dessert over every other dessert. For sure. Always has been, always will be.
What about some of the other stuff in the test kitchen?
Like what?
Well, those are the two that I...
Well, there was fried cereal. Fried cereal is where you get all of your favorite puff cereals. You can't use the flakes because they kind of disintegrate. So there's... you did catch me off guard on this. Like anything the puffs, like Fruit Loops or puff cereal, Kix or puff cereals, Cocoa Puffs or puff cereals. I mean, all the puffy ones, and there's a bunch. Cap'n Crunch is, Reese's, whatever it's called is. And there's, there's a bunch of puff cereals. So the puff stuff, not the flakes, the puff. So what you do is you get it and you put it in, get a cup of each one or more. I mean, more. more than a cup. And you have to put it in the strainer so all the dust goes away. And you get rid of the dust, and then you get a couple sticks of butter in a big skillet, and you melt the butter in there, and then you just toss the puff cereal mix, whatever your mix is, you toss it around in there, and then it absorbs all the butter, and there's nothing better in the world than butter. I mean, it doesn't get soggy.
Okay.
It stays crunchy and crispy. Okay. I mean, it's a butter-soaked, salty butter-soaked cereal. Is ecstasy. It's called fried cereal. So that is off the charts. I did a bunch. I did the Jell-O Christmas tree where there were lights in the Jell-O. I used a traffic cone as the mold. Yeah, I haven't been doing much with a test kitchen lately, but, you know, I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I've just been busy working on this book.
Right.
And that was very time consuming, way more so than I thought. So I got that. That's what I've been doing lately.
Now, our friend Boris has a question that he wanted me to ask you specifically.
Boris.
You mentioned that you were a car guy.
Yes.
And this has driven him crazy. He's been dying to know this.
Yes.
He's been saying to me, if you ever talk to Charles Phoenix, you have to ask him.
Okay, what's the question?
There's two questions.
All right.
Which of the old cars is your favorite?
Okay.
And of the old cars, which do you think is the last of the cool ones?
Which is the last of the cool ones? Well, that's a good question. You know, I'm reluctant to admit what my all-time favorite car is. I mean, there are several. I like big-finned American cars. The tail fin of the American car, which is iconic.
That's what we were predicting.
Hit its zenith in 1959, basically. The 59 Cadillac and the 61 Imperial. Those are the two cars that had the two regular production cars that had the biggest tail fins. 1959 Cadillac, if you want to Google, and 1961 Imperial. Those are the ones with the biggest fins. Those are the cars that I grew up with as used cars. So I'm into the whole fin movement on the whole way up and the whole way down. But I love cars in general. I'm a car guy. I also like European sports cars, but I don't admit that. I mean, that's my dirty little secret.
Sports cars are great.
Oh, I know. I know all about them. I love them. Believe me. It's just I like kind of keep that as my little secret obsessed is no longer a secret. But I love cars. I'm a car person. I love, you know, new cars. There's, you know, ones that I see and I'm like, whoa, that's amazing. You know, I'm totally into automotive styling. I'm into styling, period. Styling of everything. And the mass consumerism market has driven styling over the past, you know, like 89 years into a frenzy.
Yeah.
And at no point was it ever more extravagant and over the top than the mid-century era. So that's another reason why I'm really interested in studying the mid-century and sharing my finds in my shows, because it's very theatrical. And, you know, if you can kind of pair it with an interesting story or something that happened, you know, some interesting information, people are interested. So,
Yeah.
So, Vaughn, did that answer your question?
So,
my all-time favorite?
Yeah, all-time favorite.
Well, you know, I like, there are a few that I like. I mean, it changes every day.
Okay.
But I really love the shape of the tail fin and the side trim and the front end and the rear end of, it's actually a lower line car. It's the all new for 1959 Sport Fury by Plymouth.
Plymouth Sport Fury is your favorite.
The 59 Plymouth Sport Fury is one of my all-time favorites. Another all-time favorite, believe it or not, is the 61 Plymouth Fury. Look up 61 Plymouth Fury. It has the most bizarre front end you've ever seen. It was the one car that looked like they're like, we're getting rid of the fins completely. It's the one car that Detroit made that most seriously resembled a flying saucer.
Okay.
So they got rid of the fins on the back. So it's no longer doing a rocket ship thing. Now they've gone flying saucer.
Do you think that that's the last of the cool cars?
Well, no.
Because the fins kind of started to die out in the mid-60s.
They did.
Probably 63, 64 cars were starting to get boxed out.
Yeah, but they got boxy.
Yeah.
There's some amazing cars. I mean, even the boxy ones. I call that the Star Trek era.
Okay.
Because they had these real wide dashes. I mean, it's like you're driving the Starship Enterprise. So the 60s boxy cars, I also love those too. They are... As I said, I call them the Star Trek era. But, you know, the thing is, I like good quality.
Sure.
Yeah, and those cars were made, like, I mean, with thick, heavy materials that, you know, when cared for properly, lasted still to this day.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I like great design. I like good quality. And that's another thing the mid-century is full of.
Yeah.
Full of it. Full of it.
This episode is also sponsored by Tiki Tea. Founded in 1961, the Tiki Tea is a family-owned and operated tropical drink bar practicing the lost art of exotic cocktail mixing. Come try their house specialty, the Ray's Mistake, a delicious concoction of botanic liqueurs, passion fruit, gin, and rum for only $6 on Wednesdays until 9 p.m. The Tiki Tea is located at 4427 Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California. For more information, check out their website, tiki-ti.com. The Tiki Tea, ground zero for tropical drinks. This episode is also sponsored by Tiki Oasis, located at the Crown Plaza in San Diego, California, from August 10th through August 13th, and celebrating the island lifestyle. Tiki Oasis is the largest and longest-running tiki festival in the world. Enjoy four nights of DJs, bands, educational seminars, a classic car show, and a marketplace with over 100 vendors carrying everything from mugs, music, decor, clothing, and more. For ticket information or hotel reservations, visit tikioasis.com.
Are you still doing your downtown LA Disneyland tours?
No, I'm not doing my downtown, what do I call it? The Disneyland tour of downtown Los Angeles, where I say we don't have one theme park. Or wait, what do I say? We don't have one Disneyland, we have two. Downtown LA, yeah. You know, downtown LA kind of reached critical mass, so it started to be a little more difficult for me to move tour groups around there efficiently. So I kind of just said, okay, been there, done that. I did it, I think, for about 12 years. So basically, we would go on my Disneyland tour downtown Los Angeles. We would go we would start at Union Station. Then we'd ride the Gold Line, which is on a raised track from Union Station to Chinatown. And then I say we're going on the monorail now. And then we would go to Chinatown, and we would go to several places there. Now, Chinatown has changed a lot in the last few years. Old Chinatown.
You know, sometimes they don't turn the neon on.
I know. Well, that's
such a bummer, because I'll drive down there. Well, I'll have my kids, or I'll have somebody from out of town. I'll say, oh, I got to show you Chinatown.
Yeah.
To go over to the main plaza.
Yeah.
And the neon will all be off.
I know. It happens. There's no guarantees in
life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we would go a few places there, which were amazing. And, you know, I love old Chinatown. I love it. And then we would sometimes go to Philippe's for lunch, or when Clifton's opened back up again.
Right.
We went to Clifton's. And, you know, Clifton's is a pretty easy sell. People love Clifton's. Then and now, everyone loves it. And then we would go to the Bradbury Building. We'd walk through Grand Central Market. When Angel's Flight was running, we'd ride it. Right. If not, we'd walk up beside it. We'd go up to Angel's Flight to what's that area up there called? I've lost my mind. Well, Tomorrowland. It's Tomorrowland up there, because you're in the land of the skyscrapers now. And so we'd go up there, California Plaza. That's the area. And then we'd go to the Walt Disney Concert Hall, which is Walt Disney Concert Hall is the castle of downtown.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what we do. And then we go to Carroll Avenue, greatest concentration of Victorian.
Carroll Avenue is amazing.
I love Carroll Avenue. I love Victorian style.
I wonder, you know, when I drive down there, some of those homes do really need some restoration. And I wonder if the people that are in those properties... No, I'm sure that they know.
Well, Carroll Avenue is, there's only about two or three on there that can use a restoration. The rest of them have already been restored. Carroll Avenue is...
Well, some of them just look like they're... I mean, some of them don't look like they're in bad
shape.
Well,
I know, but wait a minute now.
Okay.
Adrian,
uh-huh.
You're being way too tough. It's not... If it were a perfect world...
There were a few gems on there.
Oh, no, more than a few.
Yeah.
If it were a perfect world, everything would be in perfect condition. It's not a perfect world, so... we have to kind of take the, you know, the varying degrees, find the beauty in everything. That's the key. That's one
and
of the
great... And in the same neighborhood is the Fast and Furious house. I had to throw
Fast
that.
And Furious?
I had to throw that out there.
You know, I've been...
Dominic Toretto's house is in that same neighborhood.
I don't know. You're losing me now. I know. I've heard
walk,
of it.
You could walk from Carroll Avenue to his house.
I know the Fast and Furious is a massive money-making franchise in the realm of the entertainment industry, but I know nothing about it.
Say, I stumped you again.
You did on the Fast and Furious. No, I respect it. I respect it. I just don't. It's just, you know, I don't know.
You know, it's
no, I'm sure it's entertaining.
Industry.
That's the kind of movie that I would go see. Like, here's how I see those kind of movies, because I don't really go to the movies that much either. I like documentaries, that's my thing. But I sometimes say, okay, it's Sunday night, I'm going to the drive-in. So, like, whoever, we all go to the drive-in movie theater, and there's three amazing drive-in movie theaters left in Southern California, at least in the... There's the Tiki Tea. I mean, the Tiki... What am I saying? The Mission Tiki.
Tiki.
Yeah, Tiki Tea is another thing. I was telling someone about that earlier today. The Mission Tiki in Pomona is a beautiful drive-in. It's a show place. And it's fun. I love being there. I love like everyone going like, oh, I'm so happy to be at the drive-in. That's a great feeling, going to the snack bar, watching the movie. Now, that's the kind of place that I say, I don't even care what's playing. I'm telling you, find the drive-in movie theater in your area and go. It's heaven.
Yeah.
It's so amazing.
Yeah, they're fun.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So, yeah, me, you know, I like all the old-timey things. So, yeah, I'm always, you know, looking for places that have a heart and soul, places where, you know, places that are historic. I mean, I never
You found everything?
No. You can never find it all.
I mean,
it's endless.
Well, okay.
It's endless.
I know that you've been all over Southern California.
I've been all over the United States.
Yes, all over the United States, but living here in Southern California,
yeah.
You've got to know where, I mean, if I point out, if I point to a town.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to know all the cool vintage spots in that town.
Well, I know some of them for sure, but, you know, I mean, there's no way you can cover everything. I mean, yeah, I've covered a lot, and I know a lot of great places that still exist, but there's stuff around every corner, no matter where you go. You just need to know what you're looking for, and you need to know when you find it.
Okay.
So I know what I'm looking for, and I know when
I find it. You still get that feeling when you find something that's really
new. Oh, it's nirvana.
Yeah, isn't it?
It's nirvana. I love treasures and time warps.
Yeah.
And they're rare. I mean, they're rare, but they're out there.
Do people bring you things? Do they bring you photos or postcards and say, there's this place that...
Well, I just got this email right now from my publisher saying that she thinks these people have Lure meat rocket photos.
Right.
And all this bolts of Hawaiian fabric from the 50s because they manufactured it. So it's like, okay.
And do you feel an obligation to document all of those things so that they don't get forgotten? Like something like that would probably get forgotten if you...
Document everything, but I can, you know, I mean, if it's interesting enough, I'll document in some way that I know how, either through social media or including it in one of my shows. So, you know, but I mean, obviously I can't document everything.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not enough time in a million lifetimes to document everything. I mean, I'm talking also about finding like images of places that are gone and stuff like that. I mean, there's this one, in my new book, Addicted to Americana, there's this section. Well, there's this one page, double page spread on this shopping center that was in Ohio, built 1958. And in the parking lot, they had the Seven Wonders of the World, only in like miniature golf scale. And there's pictures of it in there. And it's the most bizarre thing. But I did hear that one of the great wonders of the world still exists. Only the Eiffel Tower still exists. But I have to go play a detective and find it. I'm also obsessed with those giant muffler men that used to be around everywhere.
Right.
I mean, that's a whole cult. They have a cult following and they have an interesting story. So, you know, I found out of a few of those that are hiding. There's stuff lurking about everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, you just kind of have to know how to play detective and, you know, what you're looking for and know when you find it.
Yeah.
Treasure hunting.
Yeah, it's treasure hunting.
Storytelling.
Yeah.
Getting the story.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up, I want to thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you.
And I want to ask you,
what
is the future of Charles Phoenix?
Well, the future of Charles Phoenix is this new book, Addicted to Americana, and I have a show to match it, a show that goes along with it, and I'm working on a new tiki mug. My tiki mug, did you see this one?
Yes.
What's it called? The Pudcano, the Aloha Land?
This is the Pudcano, it's the pineapple
upside down cake
with the volcano that erupts out of the top.
Yeah, and that was a real cake at my Aloha Land slideshow at Down the Beach
Company. I gotta tell you, the very first time I saw that, I thought, that is epic.
Well, wait till you see the one I'm working on now.
Okay,
all
right.
It's also epic. I'm really excited about it. So, you know, just more of the same. I'm, you know, trying to do more videos and stuff and you know, more shows and everything. I love it. I really enjoy what I do. It's from the heart. You can't fake the enthusiasm. I couldn't, at least.
And if anybody wants to find your books,
CharlesPhoenix.com.
I'm sure they can find them on Amazon and all their other retailers. I know that I've seen your books all over Palm Springs.
Yeah, Palm Springs. We love Palm Springs. Also, Modernism Week is coming up. Palm Springs Modernism. Have you been to Modernism Week? It's modernismweek.com. Now, do you know about that?
I do.
Yeah, that's amazing. If you guys love Palm Springs, go to Palm Springs Modernism Week, or as they call it online, modernismweek.com. And it's happening in October, and it's happening in February. And I do double-decker bus tours there, and we could drive around all the neighborhoods. Well, not all, but most of the highlight. We highlight the greatest neighborhoods in Palm Springs, and I tell you all about them and everything and what to look for and when to go and how to get invited in. It's fantastic.
Wow. Great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and chat with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you. And for your listeners out there, if you have any questions, comments, or just want to leave a shout out, stop by our Facebook group page, Inside the Desert Oasis Room, or find us on Instagram at Polynesian Pop. Cheers and aloha.
I know.